at Kewaunee Inn in cabin 8, talking a little bit about Camp Kewaunee and your years in camp. So this is Dick Miller, July 30th, 1999. And Dick, would you kind of share with us a little bit about your early years up here and your beginnings as a regular camper with your dad and mother?
My parents started up here before I was born. Dad came, I think, first in 1925 and was here for every year until 1964, except for 1927 when he was in Edinburgh doing graduate work. The tale is that I was brought up here when I was 4 months old, 1931, in a basket in the back seat of the car. In those days, I was told the trip from Springfield took 4 days by car. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And by the time I could start remembering, it was down to 2.5 days. Better cars, better roads. My first year in camp as a camper was 1939. First 2 years, 39 and 40, I was a day camper. I stayed with mother in one of a couple camps just beyond the inn. Mm-hmm. We had the camp known as Eleonora and the Pierceys. Noel Piercy was in the shop.
Right.
Had Horatio, the other camp.
Oh. And where were these located exactly?
They were just north of the inn property, across from the old inn, which has been down for a long time.
Yeah.
Back of Pine Hill, which is the Myers place on the shore.
Okay.
Back from the shore, maybe 300 yards.
I used to see that. There used to be a big red barn back in there, too, on the road.
Our road came down by the red barn. The red barn came down in a big snowfall in about 1968 or 69.
Uh-huh, right.
Along with a number of other barns that came down on that same snowfall.
Yeah.
My first lodge was the Falcon. Second lodge was the Panther.
And you would have been then, what about what age?
I was 8 and 9.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was in as a regular camper, Polecat, Pine Tree, and then the camp suddenly got very young. It was the war.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to the Lynx and then was in the Wildcat for a couple of years, which I think was 44, 45.
40, we were there in both years.
Yes, 2 years.
Yeah, that's right. I came in 44 and you were there, and then we stuck around, and that's when Lau and Stellings and Romy.
They came in 45.
They came in 45, right.
And 46, we were all master campers in the Crow's Nest.
Right.
And Andre Maison-Pierre is one of the counselors.
That's
Daisy
right.
Trowbridge, the other counselor?
No, Pop Noel was
Pop Noel.
Was up there.
Daisy was our counselor in one of the years in the Wildcat then.
Yeah, Ben Hadley had been our counselor. Mm-hmm. I think it was in 45, and for some reason we didn't get along with him too well.
Ben
and
was
too
close to our age.
I think so.
Couldn't discipline us.
Right, right.
That was necessary.
Some of his stories were a little different, and so we got Daisy.
Yeah. Then I was JC in the Deer for 47 and 48.
Mm-hmm.
And by that time I was helping out in the sailing department. Joe Selden, the mm-hmm. swimming counselor, was the senior counselor in the Deer.
Mm-hmm.
Then 49, 50, 51, and 52, I was senior counselor in the Birch,
mm-hmm.
the old Birch, which is just to the south of the old main lodge, the one that
right.
burned in 77.
Yeah.
And was sailing master those 4 years.
Oh,
I got interested in sailing
mm-hmm.
In 1946. I hadn't done too well in the prior years. In 46, I spent a lot of time in sailing. Bob Page was a sailing master. He had been at Kewaunee as a camper
mm-hmm.
in sometime in the 30s, and then had been away for a while. Came back for 1 year. So that's when I learned to sail, and that was the year in which the camp bought the Seahawk.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. The Seagull was acquired sometime in the 20s, early 20s, I think. I remember reading that in 1927 or 28,
Mm-hmm.
The seagull got new sails. Meant that it had been around for a while.
Yeah. Well, you know, George was always interested in sailing, so he wanted to be sure everything was in good shape.
Yeah. Well, with respect to George, one of the things I remembered was that the camp bought a Chris Craft. I'd have to guess the year, 38 or 39.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a big acquisition, and George loved to drive it.
Mm-hmm.
And, one year he ran it over the rocks in Didi, punched a hole in the bottom, and the thing started to settle. Mm-hmm. The old logging boat, the Pete, was out operating. That is, the motor was running.
Mm-hmm.
And Pete towed the Chris Craft in. Nobody was hurt. If the Pete had not been running, the Chris Craft would have sunk.
Uh-huh.
A very hard boat to get started.
Mm-hmm.
The Pete eventually got towed out onto the ice by Lawrence Briggs. And when the ice went out, the Pete sank.
Mm.
And pieces kept appearing downstream, down towards the outlet.
Mm-hmm.
But George would tell me when I was sailing master, make sure to mark Didi properly. Make sure the flags are right.
Yeah.
Because one year, George said, the flags were not right, and I had an accident. right, George.
I was just wondering, what did happen to the Chris Craft? I can't recall.
They sold it.
They sold it after it had its accident.
Yes.
What was left of it?
I don't know how badly it was damaged.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take much of a hole to sink it. I suspect they just didn't want to have it around. It was too much of a burden.
I think in one of the other stories, maybe Hal Myers, I think this story was told, and he had said that what he heard after the accident was George very casually saying, "We could use some help out here."
Well, my recollection is that my mother and I were having supper with Franny Frank down on the shore where the Myers camp now is. And we saw George out, and saw somebody out in the Chris Craft, and then suddenly the Chris Craft just stopped in the middle of the lake. We, of course, didn't know what had happened. Which is why I date it in 38, 39. It could be 40.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's interesting. Well, were there any other activities earlier than your sailing that you remember, either the counselors or the activity? I mean, you were much into swimming, or were you much into other parts of athletics?
I learned to swim here.
Yeah.
And the swimming counselors in 39 and 40, maybe 41, were the Johnson brothers. Bob Johnson was here for 1 year, and Howie Johnson was here for two or three. Bob swam at Ohio State, and Howie swam for Yale.
Mm-hmm.
And the names of other swimming counselors until Joe Selden.
Mm-hmm.
Dick Hall was here 1 year. And he was the year I was 15, so that was 1944.
Mm-hmm.
That was the year a number of us at age 15 got our senior life saving.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know. Weren't you part of our group in the Crow's Nest that got our senior life saving in 46? I know I got mine in 46.
I'm sorry, 46. You're right. Okay. I was wrong. 46.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember that because you kind of wrote me into that.
I was doing my arithmetic wrong.
That's all right. I wouldn't expect you to have all this on the tip of your tongue, but. I just happened to remember that. Well, that was important to me. Of course, I got into boating, and I like the waterfront very much too. And now that you remind me, for some reason, I hadn't remembered exactly, you know, the years that you were heading up sailing. So I think that's an interesting observation. What was your impression as you grew up and were around here, as far as GR was concerned, and even Florence, you know, I got a little bit of Florence when she would call up for George in the office for the year or two that I was in there. And I think it's interesting to get impressions of young people, how they see certain adults, Raymond.
Well, Florence was associated in my mind with the inn. I don't remember ever seeing her in camp.
Yeah.
And of course, with her physical problems, she was
rather limited.
Mobile. And George, as a result, spent a lot of time at the inn as well. And Raymond and Franny seemed to spend no time here. So that there seemed to be within Frank Brothers Incorporated this division of labor between George on the one hand and Raymond on the other, although mm-hmm. George was in camp a lot. Mm-hmm. And in the 30s and 40s, George and Raymond would divide the activities. Some of the activity heads would report to George, and some of the activity heads would report to Raymond.
Right.
And George was the person to whom the sailing master reported.
Chief Marshall, did you, that when you talked about the activities right away, then I think of Chief Marshall, who kind of oversaw.
Well, Chief was the head counselor.
Yeah, and he was around a lot, too.
He was the manager of the activities. Mm-hmm. I don't think that when I was sailing master, I ever thought of myself as reporting in any sense mm-hmm. to the chief, although I suppose I was supposed to.
Right. It was very laid back.
I was fairly independent mm-hmm. in the way I ran the department. Mm-hmm. And when I had to go buy wine, I just went and bought it and mm-hmm. charged it and then told people about it afterwards.
Right. Were there any particular issues that came up while you were sailing master that would be kind of interesting to make note of? Buying equipment or programs or approaches, or even some of your kids that you came out, some of the campers that came out, were there certain ones that did exceptionally well or made a few rather serious mistakes that you had to kind of clean up after? Just
from
interesting.
This distance, they were all A-plus
students. They were all A-plus students. Okay.
But in those days, we had the Gull and the Hawk, the two Cape Cod baby knockabouts.
Yeah.
One at that point was virtually brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was 30 years old. In addition, we had two creaky wooden-hulled catboats.
Okay.
And Franny would, every year, repair the sails for me. We never bought new sails for those things.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, we had the Snipe, which was in bad shape. The Betty H, named for the guy who built it in the shop,
mm-hmm.
Heimberger.
Yeah, that was back, I think, in the late 20s, I think.
I don't remember when he mm-hmm. built it. But it was one of the boats.
Mm-hmm.
We always had trouble with it.
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to sail right.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other boat was a mahogany-hulled 12-foot dinghy that had a sail. And the story was that it was the dinghy that belonged to the Loggaman yacht.
Oh.
Robin, Derek, Peter, Tinker's father's yacht. And Robin had brought it up and just left it, and we used it. And what happened to it, I don't know. I haven't seen it in decades.
Mm-hmm.
And that was not really an official part of the Kewaunee fleet.
Mm-hmm.
Then when I left, that is after 52, the first thing that seemed to happen to the sailing department was they got rid of those two creaky catboats,
mm-hmm.
which was a good move. And they replaced them with four, I think, Tech dinghies.
Oh, yeah.
Which lasted some time. They don't have those anymore. And the fleet now is 10 boats. I counted them.
My goodness.
Two Cape Cods, going back to the early, one of them back to the early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Two lasers, two aquafins, three aquafins, a couple of sunfish. So eight out of the 10 boats are one or two person, very fast planing hull boats,
mm-hmm.
the kind that had not yet been invented when I was in camp.
Yeah.
But they are very nice boats to have in the fleet. I don't remember any major problems. We just ran the program. I do remember being out with three other older campers. This is when I was sailing master.
Mm-hmm.
The wind was heavy. We were sailing well, I thought. sailing right out in front of camp. And I had everybody as far astern as I could get them because he wanted the weight placed that way to correct a heavy weather helm in those boats. And we hit a wave wrong, and we took on a lot of water and capsized.
Oh, my.
Right out there in front of the Sumerian, and George Frank was standing on the shore watching.
Oh, boy.
So we got the boat in and bailed it out, and I had to go tell George what had happened, why I'd done. That is almost the only time that one of the CCs had ever gone over.
Uh-huh.
Nobody had ever taken it over, as far as I could remember. And here was the sailing master who had done it.
Yeah, well, that's kind of interesting. There are these kind of activities that come up that you remember. What about you also had a lodge a good part of the time that you were a sailing master too, right?
I had a lodge the whole time.
And you were in the Deer, pretty much? That was kind of a special...
I was in the Birch.
You were in the Birch, okay.
Yeah, I was the sailing... as a junior counselor.
Yeah, I see.
And then as a senior counselor, I had the Birch.
You had the Birch.
I'd show up to camp early because I put the boats into the water and got the rig so that we'd be ready to go at the start of the season. And every time, first season or two, I would ask whoever was there, George or Raymond, which lodge I had, and they'd tell me, well, the Birch. So third and fourth year, I just moved into the Birch automatically. I didn't even ask anybody.
Right.
I figured they would put me in there again.
Yeah, right.
So I got to have had that corner suite in the Birch Lodge looking out over the lake.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very nice. Yeah. Well, I enjoy, of course, the boathouse is right next door to your lodge, too. I always seem to gravitate to that area when I come back in that area. Well, of course, it's easy to get into the discussion of the time when we were together, but perhaps are there some stories about when you were camping or... I don't know, did you ever do much tripping with Henry Blau, for instance? Henry was kind of in the trips. And, of course, Romy was in tennis. And Stillings, what was he, campcraft? I don't remember exactly.
No, he was in boating.
He was in boating.
I didn't quite know what to do with him. So he ended up in boating, I think.
Well, I was just thinking, either... trips, you know, we went to Monhegan. I think we once went on that Booth Bay
Windjammer. I can remember going on a Windjammer once. I went to Monhegan once.
Yeah.
Popham Beach a couple of times.
Right.
I never went on a Washington trip. I went on Katahdin a couple of times. Both times my father was on there. We went up the Hunt Trail.
Mm-hmm.
1 year across the Knife Edge and down off of Pomola on the Dudley Trail, I think, and hiked back. And that's a very long day.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year we went up Pomola, across the Hunt Edge and down the Hunt, across the Knife Edge and down the Hunt, and did the reverse.
Mm-hmm.
Just as long a day doing it that way as it was going the other way.
Yeah, right.
And Henry Blau and I, 2 years ago, went up Pomola on a much easier trail and found that at our advanced stage, that was about all we could handle. We didn't even step out onto the Knife Edge. It was a great trip.
Yeah, I remember going on the Knife Edge too, but I had lost the names of the different trails. But it was Ross with us, you think, in 1946? Was Blau with you both times that you remember earlier going? I know Henry would have been with me. Because again, it was the Crow's Nest year when I remember going on Katahdin. But though you've been up there so many times,
I don't remember anybody on that trip except my father.
Mm-hmm.
As I don't remember individuals. Bates was drove the truck and provided food when we got down.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember going on two canoe trips.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them Rangeleys, one on the Rangeley Lakes, and Blau was on that trip, as was Stillinger.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect Romy was on the trip.
I probably was too, yeah. I remember Rangeley.
We went put in at South Arm, and the first night at Middle Dam. Mm-hmm. Second day, we went up Lower Richardson to, I think it was Upper Richardson, and stayed overnight on Students Island, Toothacre Island, one of those.
Yeah.
And then the third day, we had rain that night, and the third day, the wind came, and we had big wind out of the northwest. We were supposed to go against the wind up to Payne's Landing and put a take out at that point. We got blown onto a beach, a deserted beach, where we stayed, and Bates in a rented launch came and rescued us. My impression was that it was probably 7:30. The wind had started to die down.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went back and got, it was all right. It was late dinner.
Yeah, I remember that.
I can remember
coming back on the truck late.
We started a fire on the beach,
mm-hmm.
and to dry us out and keep us warm. And I can remember Stollinger, because he had a brand new jacket and it was wet and he was a irritated.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him, well, hang it up behind the fire, which he did do. You know, of course, the sparks and the fire burned holes in the jacket. He was furious at me for that.
Oh, those are the kind of things that are a little different. Do you remember participating in any Duke kinds of things, or knowing of others who played different roles at the Duke of Zanzibar, or other kinds of activities of that sort?
Duke was kind of dying out, I think. Revived fitfully in most years. Purple Z's on the forehead of kids at night, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But my father would tell me stories about what the Duke would do in the 20s and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Shepherd was one of the Dukes.
Mm-hmm.
I should remember the names of a couple of others.
Well, Don Wambaugh, somebody had mentioned. Does that ring a bell with you?
If he was, he was not one that did it perpetually,
mm-hmm.
that was throughout the whole week.
Mm-hmm.
He may have been.
Mm-hmm.
But the Duke would appear every day, in one way or another,
hmm.
during the last week.
Oh, I see.
And there would be a trial. The Duke would finally be captured.
Hmm.
Be a trial, public trial. And, of course, the Duke would be sentenced, and the sentence would likely be death by drowning.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a recollection of the Duke, whoever it was. I think it was probably the swimming counselor being sentenced.
Uh-huh.
And then walking out into the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And he had on his head a hat, which is a very large tin funnel.
Hmm.
So he walked out and just kept going until it was over his head.
Mm-hmm.
And the funnel for a few moments stayed floating, and of course the Duke just went underwater, swam over to the big dock, and hid until all the boys were in bed.
Mm-hmm.
who that was, really? I remember. I would have to put that in the late 30s.
Uh-huh. Is that right? Yeah, I never experienced that, starting in 44.
Franks tried to kill the Duke. The Franks did not want the Duke to do much in the way of upsetting the camp.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to stop it because their problem was that the little boys in the Eagle and the Falcon Lodges would wet their beds. And
mm-hmm. yeah.
then what do you do with wet sheets
right.
if this is the night before the kids go home? And the mothers, a week later, opened the trunk to a moldy, smelly sheet. I think that was what they didn't like about that. At least that was the excuse they were using.
Mm-hmm. Well,
before I forget it,
yeah.
the other canoe trip that I can remember
mm-hmm.
called the Rainy Lakes was on Aziskouas, or Aziskous, put in at Wilson's Mills, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
where there's a big dam, part of the power structure of the main power company.
Mm-hmm.
And we just went up the lake 12 miles or so,
mm-hmm.
stayed overnight at a public campground, and came back. Kind of a dull trip.
Mm-hmm.
on with the other trip, and I remember Stoner and Lau and Romy and probably you on that one.
Maybe. I could have. I don't remember that.
I never went on a river trip, kind of.
No, I never did either in those days. It had been kind of interesting, whitewater trips. But
yeah. I do remember others going out on the Appalachian Trail.
Mm-hmm.
I was asked a couple times if I wanted to go on that, and I said no, that just seemed like too much struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that several of the counselors insisted as part of their agreement with the Frank brothers that they would have a period off to go hike the Appalachian Trail.
Oh.
That was Herb Erf, probably Gordon Willard, maybe some others. Well, Romy and Blau and Merrill Sproul were going off the Appalachian Trail one year. They packed their packs the night before with all his food and clothing. They're going to be gone for a week. And they left the packs in the counselor's room, and they had weighed the packs prior that night, prior to their going to bed. And I think the weight of each of them was about 60 pounds.
Oh, my.
Well, they went to bed early. They wanted to get up for an early start, get going. So I saw the packs and knew whose was which. I put a 10-pound rock in Romy's pack, a 10-pound rock in Blau's pack. And I didn't think I knew. I didn't want to do it to Merrill Sproul. He didn't know him all that well, and also he was smaller than the other two.
Yeah.
I figured that they would be smart enough to weigh their packs before they took off. And a 70-pound pack is different than a 60-pound pack.
Absolutely.
But they did not. They hiked the whole first day. And with those rocks in their pack.
My goodness.
Blau discovered his rock first when they were cooking dinner. And had some choice comments. And Romy thought that was so riotous that Blau would hike for a whole day with a 10-pound rock. And then Romy discovered his rock.
He had one too, yeah.
And according to Blau, Romy then set the world's record for the 10-pound rock throw.
that's interesting. Yeah, right. Well, that's kind of fun to think about those things. Are there any other pranks that come to your mind that you would like to share as far as, you know, what other people may have done or memorable things for GR or any of the others that you mentioned Gordon Willard, which I think is great. And
I don't remember any pranks regarding the Franks. We may have tried something. I do remember a prank on Dick Hall. He was a diver from Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
As you point out, it was 1946. He wanted to practice his diving up here. He was more interested in the 3-meter board than he was in the 1-meter board. So, some of us, and I can't remember which side I was on at that point, some of us removed the board from the diving tower and hid it so that Dick Hall did not have a board to dive from. And then whoever it was that took the board sang a song at breakfast about the board. New words to some old common tune.
Right.
Well, this went back and forth for a week. There would be those who stole and hid the board singing songs, and then there would be Dick Hall and his group singing songs, asking for the board back, or something. It'd go back and forth like this. Every other meal, it would be another another song sung in front of the entire assembled camp at the main lodge.
Yeah, I imagine you were touching on that before. The GR, and who knows what RC was thinking. probably enjoyed the spirit that that generated, but at the same time, they probably were a little bit wary of just what these kinds of activities might generate.
At one point, when Romy Blau Stillinger and Miller were counselors,
mm-hmm.
Raymond made the comment that, I think in counselors' meeting, that he was glad that we had not only the older counselors, which lent experience and stability, but the younger counselors,
mm-hmm.
which added, and I'm not sure I have the word right, enthusiasm.
Right, right, yeah.
Meaning, I guess, that we were not mature, stable, responsible people.
Yeah. Well, do you have any impressions of some of the other people that are kind of on the edge in some ways, like Hal Myers, for instance? Of course, your family probably knew them because they too had a place up here. Or some of the others along the line.
Myers came up first in 1928, I think. Mm-hmm. My mother was the hostess at the Old Inn.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when my parents got to know the Myers.
Mm-hmm.
And they stayed many years at the inn for their vacation.
Oh.
And then that camp, which is now number 10, mm-hmm. the one that's halfway up the hill.
That's right.
Came on the market, and George somehow didn't buy it, but Hal Myers Sr. did buy it.
Ah.
Now, that was not the camp he wanted, but he had property. So he made a trade with George and Raymond. He
mm-hmm.
traded them that camp, which got turned into one of the cabins for the inn, for property up the beach, up the shore,
mm-hmm.
which they built on. And they built that property in 1941.
Oh, I see.
Built that camp.
Mm-hmm.
So they must have bought that in 1940 or 39, and this trade must have gone on. I don't have a date on these three camps, 7, 8, and 9.
I think it was after I came in 44, 45.
Was it? I would have put it in the late war period, early mm-hmm. post-war period.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
yeah,
not right.
I think we're about the same time. Yeah, there were other people like Peleg and, of course, the Briggses.
Let me go back. Triggered me on Hal Myers. Hal was a camper and a counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the early part of the war, went into the Navy
mm-hmm.
for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember when he got out of the Navy, but he went to Divinity School.
Mm-hmm.
And he must have gotten out of Divinity School in 1945 because he was with my dad in Springfield.
Oh, yes.
For 1 year.
1 year.
As the assistant minister of Covenant Church. And my dad left that church in 1946.
I'm glad you pinned that down because I knew he went from there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Hal became the senior minister at Covenant
mm-hmm.
when my dad left.
Mm-hmm.
And then some years later, 8, 10, 12, left to get to become senior minister of the Morristown Presbyterian Church in Morristown, New Jersey.
I see.
Down there across the river from Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay.
But Hal would come back when he was in the Navy once in a while. We'd get him to do his routine with the drums.
Yes, that's neat. I got a picture of that.
He'd play the drums, but then he'd take off and use the drumsticks to beat out the rhythm on the stage, on the footlights, on the lights overhead, and
mm-hmm.
this was somebody would be like probably Raymond would be playing the piano during it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Hal, of course, was the drum major at Princeton
mm-hmm.
When he was a student.
Yeah, he came up, he even had a service 1 year. I was trying to ask him what year that was, and he thought that was around 46, when we were still going up to Bass Rock for our Vespers, and I've got a picture of him speaking up there.
Were you part of a major push to go back to Bass Rock? We'd stopped that for a while.
Yeah, I would have been. I don't know whether I was ever asked, but...
I can remember that Wombaugh and I
mm-hmm.
did some work on that.
Yeah.
Got the boys assigned to boats and got them actually pushed out. I got the feeling that the
Franks were a little reluctant to do that.
Yeah. Well, the camp had gotten bigger,
yes.
But I really thought that was a memorable
mm-hmm.
occasion, and so you know, I did take a picture of that. And I guess it I didn't start taking pictures until 48 or 49. I spent some of the money I actually earned being a counselor up here. Maybe my first year as a senior counselor, and that had been about 48. And so I he must have come back. I thought he had done it each year, but he said, no, I was back visiting at that time. Again, going on, any other thoughts? Of course, I think that certain personalities during certain periods in their lives, you have any memories that you want to share on Walter? He would have been here just about the time you were a younger camper.
My only recollection of Walter when he was a camper and counselor was sometime in the 30s. He and I think his brother Alan ran the archery range.
Oh, I see.
Which is not in its current location. The archery range is off to the south of the new camp entrance road.
Oh, okay.
It was over in that general area. I don't remember spending any time there, but I do have a recollection of both mm-hmm. Yesterbrook at that point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't see Walter again until Walter and Jane and Joan and I went to a house auction in Wilton. We just happened to run across each other
mm-hmm.
Before Walter bought the camp. That was, I don't know, 69, 70,
I think it's 69.
It
was one date that
I don't
was
have that date in mind. And when Walter decided he wanted to buy the camp, he didn't have enough money to buy the whole thing. And so there were a number of us who contributed, bought some shares, in effect. And Walter had about half, and the rest of us together had about half. But those people were Betty and Lou Smith, Bill and Hal. Hal and Esterbrook, too, had some shares.
Mm-hmm.
John and Lydia Dietrich eventually got some shares. I had some, have some still.
Did Bates get something? Or was that
later? My recollection is that Bates was given shares.
Given shares.
And then he gave them back.
Oh, okay.
Something like that. And Herb Birch got some shares too, I think, and he may have given them back.
Mm-hmm.
That's a little hazy. But Ed Tullis put the financial deal together.
Oh, did he?
He arranged, convinced Walter that there was enough money in it, enough cash flow so that Walter could get some adequate compensation. Walter was never able to get what Ed thought Walter should be able to get.
Mm-hmm.
Too many other expenditures, and I think Walter was not as careful as he could have been on some of the non-essential expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
So Walter and Jane together owned 56% of the shares. They no longer own that. They've given the shares to their children for tax reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've done what you know, which is to set up this
mm-hmm.
George Raymond Frank Foundation, which will take ownership of Quantity Inc. stock. Quantity Inc. will go out of existence, and the place will be run as a non-profit organization.
Yeah, a lot of things that have to be worked out, I'm afraid, before I can feel very comfortable with that. But anyway, that's I appreciate your commenting on that. Do you have any impressions, as I say, maybe of some others, such as the Briggses or Bates? I don't know, you mentioned a little bit about Bates already. Other individuals... Art Kiefer was one that was kind of active in our day. Dexter somewhat later, I guess maybe as we were counselors.
Well, Dexter and I never overlapped. Art Kiefer was the one
mm-hmm.
Who ran the nature department when I was
learning nature levels, and he was a very nice guy and very helpful. And a guy named Goodwin ran the nature department for the years in the 30s, up until, I would have to guess, 1942, and then their son was killed in the war, and the Goodwins never returned. And I think that was what brought brought Art Kiefer into it. Bates was kind of a constant in the sense that he was here all the time and did the trips, meaning he made some of the arrangements, drove the truck. He was the one who got the Kalani boys on to Monhegan Island, and that had been so successful that the Monhegan Island people now allow only Camp Kalani boys
to
come on the island to camp overnight.
That's interesting.
And that Bates is doing.
People like Heinberger, of course. He, you know, was a constant up here. Billy's cabin up here that Henry now owns. And
I remember Fred, but I don't remember being in camp
when he was around.
I would guess his last year was 38 or so.
Right, just a little before.
I remember Noel Piercy is the head of the shop.
Yeah.
They may have overlapped, but Noel Piercy went on through the through the 40s, and then Herb Birch came in as a shop counselor, and I don't remember what Noel Piercy's last year was.
No, I'd have to look it up on the chart to see what that was. I think he was here at least a year or two after I got here, so I'd guess, I mean, maybe like 44, 45 as a point on that. Well, let's see now, Franny, any other impressions on Franny, the hard worker that she was, or anyone? I was thinking too of some of the other counselors that one of the swimming men was Wilbur Smith.
Coach
Smith, and he was our counselor. Was it both years, or at least one of the 2 years that we were in the Wildcat?
I would guess it's both years. But
I think so.
He had a son, Jack.
Yeah,
who was a year or two older than we were. Well, I just remember him as a firm counselor. I think firm is a good adjective to use.
Yeah.
Not overbearing.
No, I liked him as a new camper. I kind of felt comfortable with that. And Nick, of course, Roy Nickerson was
he was a constant in the boating, and he was the one who led the two canoe trips that I was on. You mentioned Lawrence, and what's her name? Briggs?
Emma
Briggs.
Right.
Emma would bake bread. Every day we'd have homemade bread. And Lawrence, I don't know how he turned out such good meals in the primitive facilities he had. But one of the memorable meals was ham that he glazed liberally with brown sugar or honey or something that was very sweet. It turned out to be delicious.
Yeah, he did. Of course, our lodge, I think both in the Wildcat and the Crows Nest, seemed to consume volumes of milk. And Romy, of course, I guess, was famous for his consumption.
Yeah. I can remember milk was delivered in big metal containers.
Right.
And you have to go out and pick the containers up and pour the milk into the aluminum pitchers. How many gallons were in those?
Those big...
They seem very heavy to me.
Yeah, I would have to guess.
Knock the metal tops off.
Yeah, that was
hard. Wooden mallet.
Right. That was a tough job. Yeah, well, of course, Emma endeared herself to me by baking my birthday cakes.
Yes. Which she did for everybody. You were not single out in that regard.
But so, and the cookies. You can't forget the cookies that Emma did so well. I mean, she was quite a she didn't let anything go askew in her kitchen either. She was quite an organizer.
Lawrence would always open the camp. They lived over 40 miles east of here. And he would be here throughout June. I don't know when he showed up. I came on many years, about the first of June.
I guess you moved through that.
And he was there, and we had a crew of people to do work. I'd work in the sailboats, and other people would paint parts of the lodges and would paint the canoes. I remember doing that some years, getting the place in shape. So that's part of my recollection of Lawrence Bridge.
Well, I always thought they were a great couple. What about anything you want to mention about your dad? Are there any impressions that you would like to share, stories coming up, getting in camp, being here after camp? I mean, you know, you folks really kind of lived up here, as you implied, for a substantial length of time, or interaction with any individuals that were a little bit amusing or kind of showed their personalities.
I should have a lot of stories, but I...
He sheltered you?
Of course, it was nice to have Dad around all the time. Nobody else had a father in camp.
Especially with his pedigree.
But we didn't... I would go off on occasion with my folks on their day off. I was a camper. Mm-hmm. And I can remember going to the shore and having lobster on at Portland Headlight on a number of occasions. It was his day off, and I was a camper. So I would just play hooky from camp. When I got a little older, they didn't do that. They did not take me out of camp. They just went off for themselves. Dad would run the Sunday services, both the morning service and the vesper service at night. Would either ask blessing for dinner or at the meals, or call on counselors, and it was always interesting. The counselors had advance notice, of course. It was always interesting to see what the counselors came up with, and when the dean would ask them to say grace.
Of course, your dad was known so much for his storytelling, and was that something that you saw him doing other times? I mean, either in his work at church or with you as a family, you and your older brother, Bud? Or is this something that he just kind of saved as something that he could offer that was of interest?
That was something for camp. I don't think he did that in any form at home, unless you consider preaching as storytelling. But he would tell stories, and frequently, once every 3 or 4 years, tell parts of Les Miserables.
Right.
And of course, he had this ability to tell the story up to some crisis point, and leave the kids hanging, waiting for the next Saturday night. What's going to happen?
Yes, right. Yeah, that was great too. Yeah. Well, I really do appreciate, you know, getting a chance to talk. I'm sure there are some other aspects of this that we're going to lose. I know your dad was in campcraft, and that was, of course, an area that he and I do appreciate having a chance to talk about him too, because he was a person that I did not have an opportunity to interview. And
campcraft was not a terribly popular activity, as I remember it.
Right.
Either for the boys or for the counselors. I think Dad got into campcraft as a counselor only because one year they didn't have any counselor to supervise that department.
Yeah.
I don't remember that he ever read any level winners at campfire for campcraft.
I don't recall.
He may have done that. So that there were others helping. And I don't think he ever thought of himself as head of campcraft.
Well, I guess he shared it with Birch after a while, didn't he? Or maybe all the time there was somebody else. Then there was this another Strong, wasn't there? I know he wasn't a terribly popular counselor about the time, 45, 46, in the Moose Lodge. And there were all kinds of pranks played on this guy, and I remember.
A vague recollection, the name doesn't.
He disappeared during cleanup, you know, and so the kids were just running around.
Did Kevin Warren do Camp Craft?
I don't remember the name.
Somebody John Could've. Dietrich brought up, but I may know. I guess I have him in the wrong era, because he mm-hmm. would have been in the 70s.
I see. Yeah, I would have been. Yeah, so that's another aspect. Your dad.
I do remember the Bittenbenders in Camp Craft.
Oh, do you?
That was
uh-huh.
in the late 30s.
Uh huh.
I have one recollection of two of the Bittenbenders playing a game of catch
mm-hmm.
with a raw egg, and they would toss it back and forth, and of course they'd get farther and farther apart,
mm-hmm.
and the game was. The winner in this game was the one who caught the egg and it didn't break.
And furthest away.
The loser was the one who caught the egg and it broke, mm-hmm. which would end the game.
Yeah, that's a neat game. I hadn't. I don't think I remember seeing
sure,
that.
Yeah, watching them do this. It was so funny.
That would. Yeah, yeah. You'd always be tense, wondering when it was going to break.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, what about I don't know. I guess the sweets. Did your experience cross with the sweets? Well, they came in the 20s, actually. I guess there was one that continued into the early 30s that maybe Hal remembered.
The sweets are only a name to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are to me.
I don't remember them personally as part of the camp.
How about Carl Elmore? Did your
oh yes, experience? Carl Elmore would stay on the point. And would mm-hmm. appear every Sunday to preach the sermon.
Mm-hmm.
His arrangement, I don't know what arrangement he had with his church, but he seemed to be there the whole summer.
Yeah, right. Sometime along there, he retired too, I mm-hmm. guess, from the church in New Jersey, Englewood, New Jersey, and went to Florida. But yeah, that was quite a nice arrangement that he
yeah.
had in that house out on the point.
Yeah. My dad's arrangement with the Springfield Church was for four Sundays of vacation in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And frequently that got stretched to six Sundays. And of
oh.
course, Dad and Mother would leave Monday after the last Sunday he was preaching and then go to Maine and then return on Friday so that
mm-hmm.
he would stretch it beyond six calendar weeks. So occasionally they would come a little late and or leave a little early.
What about, didn't your dad then retire and go to a college in Michigan?
From Springfield in 1946. He went to a college in North Dakota.
Oh, North Dakota,
And was there for 5 years, and then in 1951 went to a college in Michigan.
Oh, okay, see, I missed that.
So he was, and I think he retired in 1958 from that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I think that's great, unless there are any other last-minute thoughts that have occurred to you. I appreciate very much.
Nothing comes to mind.
Right.
I'm sure there will be as soon as I walk up. Yeah.
Well, this isn't the only time. Probably, hopefully, we'll be back.
We'll all be back.
Times. But I do appreciate very much, then,
You're very
Dick,
welcome.
For this get-together.